to the Sick and Successful podcast. If you're a business owner, work in corporate, or have a side hustle you're passionate about, you're gonna wanna stick around. Because I promise to ask the tough questions and talk about the things others shy away from. You know, what it's really like to own a business and be chronically ill. I'm gonna give you that push you need towards following your dreams and be the friend you come back to week after week to talk about the real things in life and in business. If you have goals and are working towards them, if you're determined to be successful, no matter what life's obstacles get in the way, this podcast is for you. Dream big and tune in. Welcome back to the Sick and Successful podcast. This is your host, Natalie Supes. I'm excited to introduce our guest today. I was actually on his radio show, and we have a lot in common. His name is Jim Beach. He's a nationally syndicated radio show host from 71 AM FM stations around the country, 5 days a week. He has won the Small Business Administration Media Award for the show, the first radio show or podcast to actually win. He has written 4 books. His first book was published by McGraw-Hill in 2011. And at the age of 24, Jim founded his first company and grew that company with no capital infusion to over $12 million in annual revenue and 700 employees operating in 39 states in 3 countries. Jim taught entrepreneurship at Georgia State University for 9 years and ranked number one in business school the entire time. He has been featured in a UPS commercial. CNN called him Simon Cowell of business, and he has attended the White House Christmas parties. He's also sat next to Tony Robbins at the world premiere of the Star Wars movie. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
I love the last tidbit of your bio. That's so fun.
I didn't know that was in there.
That's so cool. So random, but it's nice, fun fact.
He made a big stink of it. He didn't like our seats and he complained and very non-Tony Robbins-esque.
Shoot. You know, we have our human days, I guess.
Yes, yes.
Well, one of the things we chatted a lot about on your show was that you also have Crohn's disease, which I found pretty fascinating. I didn't know coming on your show that you also did. So I would love to know, you have like all these accolades, you started quite young. How did you manage your illness with getting into entrepreneurship?
I think that I was forced to be an entrepreneur. I don't know that I could have done anything else. I can't have a full-time job. That's just not going to work for me. I have months where I don't work, you know, the entire month. I have days where, you know, I don't get out of bed until noon and stuff like that. My wife and I did a comparison, kind of like tracked my time, and we came right at 55% that month. I was out.
Wow.
And so I don't think that I could have a full-time job. That wouldn't work for me. Being an entrepreneur and the flexibility that that gives me is the only alternative. So when I feel good, I work. When I don't feel good, I don't work. Right now, you know, I do my radio show. It's recorded a month in advance. If I have to take a month off, I can do that and right. Not really suffer on a business sense. So everything is designed around the disease.
Wow. When were you diagnosed?
1997, I think. I was 28, maybe 26, somewhere around
there. Okay, so a little later on. Did you go to university before that, or were you trying the regular path of a corporate job before you were diagnosed?
Yes, I did. You know, I had normal jobs beforehand. I finished school and finished graduate school. And then after that, started my first business, and maybe 3 or 4 years into that, it started getting really bad. I remember I spent the night, where's the nastiest place you can think of? I spent the night on a boys' college dormitory bathroom floor because I couldn't get back to the bed.
Yeah. And I've been there. So, I've been on the floor in the university disabled bathroom many, 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 many times. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not as dirty as the boys' bathroom.
I'm sure. I scouted out all the bathrooms in that university and found like the best one, and it was a one stall. Like I spent so much time in there because it actually locked. But so, did you have symptoms while you did? You were in university. You had symptoms, so you had a regular job, and then you decided corporate because that's what you're passionate about, or a mix of both. You couldn't really do the full time even back then?
I wanted to be the CEO of Coca-Cola, and Coca-Cola decided otherwise. And so that didn't happen. Actually, Coca-Cola was the first group organization person that said I should be an entrepreneur. And I had never considered that before. It sort of started a quarter life crisis trying to decide what I wanted to do. And I had decided I wanted to go back to school again and go to architecture school, got into architecture school, and I started my first business to support myself so I could work during the summer and go to school during the winter. I only
made
it
for about... And is that the business that grew to 800
yes.
plus people? What kind of
yes.
business was that?
It was a summer camp business,
wow,
believe it or not, but we were very specialized. We were a technology camp, and so we were based at Stanford, MIT, Georgetown, SMU, UCLA, the big good school in every city, Sorbonne, Cambridge, Oxford, University of Adelaide, Sydney. So we took kids that were not on the football team, not cheerleaders, maybe not happy, taught them that smart was cool, and we taught them some HTML and things like that. Had a great time. It was an amazing business. Grew to 89 locations in just 6 years, based on the idea that we were taking these unhappy kids and making them happy for the first time.
Wow.
We would get letters from mom saying, my daughter came home and I hadn't seen her smiling in 2 years, and she was smiling for the first time. So it was an amazing business, a lot of fun.
Even that business was kind of heavy loaded on the summer, so you still had a lot of flexibility with your illness.
Actually, it was one of those things that we worked really hard during the winter so that the summer was easy.
Gotcha.
And if you had issues during the summer, it meant you weren't thinking well enough during the winter.
During the winter. Gotcha.
And so if it was well planned, well organized, the summer was easy, and I would sit in my office and wait for the phone to ring, and hopefully it wouldn't. But with 89 locations, of course, we had broken legs and broken arms and stuff.
Yeah.
We forced the kids to do outdoor activities as well. They weren't on the computers all day.
Right.
And so they did get some bodily injuries. It did happen, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Stuff like that.
So what was it that led you to closing down that business or selling it? I'm not sure which way you went.
I sold it. Health was a huge part of it. I had whole days where I would go and take three or four heating pads and put them on the floor of my office and lay on the heating pads all day long. I would just lay there, and people would come, hey, Jim, need to talk to you, you know, and I would just lay there on the floor. And they would talk to me and I would make my decisions. And I did that a lot of days. And health was certainly a big factor in deciding
it's
to
such a,
move on.
Such a picture you paint. And I think a lot of us have experienced. I know when I worked for RBC Dominion Securities for a financial company, I would sleep under the desk during my breaks because I'd be in so much pain. You just have to get out of the chair and lay flat. And people would be like, she's sleeping. And it's like, yeah. And she's also like taking 1,100% to get here in the morning. And so that's why entrepreneurship ends up being such a great path, because you are the boss.
Exactly.
And so you sold the company. How did you get into radio?
I published a book with McGraw-Hill. That's a story worth telling.
Yeah.
I was teaching at Georgia State, and we had done some cool things there with the entrepreneurship program. I had made a bet that I could start a business that semester, and the students got to choose the country and the industry. So that had attracted some attention.
Oh my God.
And Porter said, this should be a book. And I said, well, let's try to get a contract. And so unbelievably, we sent one proposal to one publisher and had a deal a week later.
That's awesome. And that
and
is unbelievable. Yeah.
Then I learned that they don't do anything to promote it. I was shocked at how little a big company like McGraw-Hill will do to promote their own books. So I ended up, being on podcasts and radio shows and did hundreds of interviews to promote the book. A lot of people said, well, you should have your own radio show. And it was one of those things that so many people said, it sort of just happened. And eventually I was offered a show with podcast only at first, then some radio distribution online and things like that. And now we're actually on 75 stations 5 days a week.
That's phenomenal. That's so awesome. And 5 days a week, that's a lot to record a month in advance. So even though you made it sound a little bit like not a lot of work, it still is quite a bit of
work.
No,
it's really not. It's 5 hours a week.
Right.
And that's broken up by commercials. So it's only a 12-minute segment that I have to not go to the bathroom. So I
That's
have
true.
had guests that I said, we're going to take a break. I got to go to the bathroom and then come back and record later, you know, stuff like that, which
Yeah.
is embarrassing when it happens. But
Especially if they don't know, I'm sure, right? For you specifically.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I don't do any preparation really in advance, I have to admit. I've been doing it for 11 years now, and so it requires no preparation in advance. I don't go get guests 100% come to me. And so that takes, you know, 2 minutes a month to say yes, no, yes, no, yes, no, 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 yes. It's all with a form. If it's a yes, they get a standard form. If it's a no, they get a standard response.
Right.
And
well, thank
so
you
it's
for
so
saying yes to me.
systematized.
Okay, I got you. So yeah, over time, you've made it really work for you. And that's kind of like my whole concept around being sick and successful is so many people that I speak to who maybe have just been diagnosed or been diagnosed for a few years, and they're in the corporate world and they're just like dying, selling their soul for a minimal paycheck usually. And for me, it's like, you can think outside of the box, or there is no box. Like, who would think you could have a 5 day a week radio show, but really work 5-ish hours a week and make it? That's not something that someone who's first diagnosed can even conceptualize. And of course, you did so much to get you there. It's not like you just jump into that position, but you really can take a look at what are you best at and make that into a career where you're not really driving yourself into the grave day by day by just pushing your body to the limits. Because that really is what it is. And that's why I got so, so, so sick, because I kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it, going to corporate until I was in the hospital for 2 weeks and couldn't. So tell me about the book, because I'm in the process of writing a book right now. So I know the different publishing, and I think there's more options now with hybrid publishing and self-publishing and Amazon. I at first thought I was going to look for a book deal and realized how they don't promote you. You're still doing it all your own, and you might even make less potentially. So yeah,
oh,
tell me that.
Guaranteed to make less,
right?
By 80 or 90%, you're going to not make any money. I would not go to a big publisher anymore. My first two books were published by big houses, and the last two books were self-published. And in a very timely manner, I was able to self-publish successfully, having it look good in under a month. So
yeah.
It's not a hard thing to learn to do as an absolute neophyte. The big thing, the factor that sort of, other than the money, which I think is huge, the other factor is that the publishing companies are just so slow. And
years
for
and years.
Writing about entrepreneurship in particular, it changes. You know, the things I said a year ago, I'm not going to say now, takes them a year to get the book out, which is, again, just ridiculous. And so I'm a big fan of the self-publishing simply because you can get it out quickly and be more relevant.
Yeah. So what drove you, or how did you find out you were even an author? Like, what drove you to write that first book?
I had a contract all of a sudden, so I needed to write it.
That first book was the Starting a Business Any Country from School. That was the first one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, called School for Startups, just like the radio show.
Amazing.
I sat down and wrote it in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow.
I, like a lot of people, am better orally than by the pen or the typing.
Keyboard.
So I would dictate the chapters, transcribe, and then edit. And then you'd be 80 or 90% down the path. That's a really good method for a lot of people who are better talkers than writers.
Writers.
So all of my books have been written that way.
That's so interesting. I would have never considered myself a writer because English was my third language and my grammar is like, my emails are embarrassing. But when I sat down to write this book, Sick and Successful, it's more of a memoir, and writing it, I would get into a story when I had 25 pokes in the hospital at 3 a.m. in the morning to get an IV in. It feels like I get put into that situation again, and I type so incredibly fast and it's very interesting, but it's so draining on my body to write about my trauma with medical and all that kind of stuff that it's taking me. I'm about 4 or 5 months in and about 75% done the book, but I've never tried to write anything before like this. So it's been a journey. So anytime anyone says they're an author, it's just like blows me away. it really is giving a piece of you, even if it is writing about entrepreneurship. You're giving everything you know, and you're putting it into something that's really timeless, even if it, if the ideas change. But like, we're still reading books from ages and ages ago, right? Rich Man, Poor Man, and all of those different books that some of the parts aren't relevant, but most of it is. So that's really cool.
Yeah, you just brought up a point that I think is really interesting. I have always dealt with my diseases. I have more than Crohn's. By just sort of ignoring it. I do what the doctor tells me, and that's it. I don't read about it. I don't look at the stuff they give me. I don't look at the books. I don't go to the foundation meetings or anything like that. And I think that you've dealt with it in a fairly different way by actively engaging and doing your whole show about it. I hide it, you know, more than you celebrate it. So I'm impressed with what you're doing.
Why? Why do you hide it? Or why has that been your, I guess, instinct to deal with it?
Well, it's a little embarrassing. You want to talk about my poo?
You know, I think it was just so embarrassing for me in university, like all the accidents and all that stuff. I just had to talk about it because hiding it, I don't know if I would have done anything with my life. Like, it was that bad. And I think I'm an only child as well. So I'm an only child to immigrant parents from Poland. And I wore green clogs in middle school and I was always the weird kid. So I just kind of stuck to that and stayed the weird kid with an illness. But it's interesting to me. I've always been interested in people who hide it because to me, that feels so much harder. Like it feels like such a burden where everybody knows I'm sick. So if I send an email and I say I can't today, 2 minutes before, they don't mind. Versus judging. I mean, I'm sure people get whatever, but yeah, it's interesting to me. So really you just blind faith follow the doctors. Has that ever done you wrong?
Yes. Yes. The doctors are very frequently wrong. I remember 15 years ago, I had a bowel resection. And for the year prior to that, I kept every day at 5 o'clock, get a 102 temperature and started to get the shakes and the sweats and everything. And I told the doctor this and he did MRIs and everything. And he was like, there's nothing wrong with you. You have Crohn's, but there's nothing new or anything to explain this. And I kept saying, no, you're wrong. Something's going on. And I don't know what they did, another test, and they discovered that I had holes in my intestine and I developed fistula that were growing down into my sacrum bones and my hip bones, pelvic bones. And those were starting to rot and everything. And I got a rot, sacral osteomyelitis, they call it. For the whole year prior to that, they were saying, no, you're fine. And I was like, no, you're just wrong. And so, and that was a good doctor that I'd been going to for years and still go to. I think we all have to realize that we know our bodies better. The doctors need to listen to us more.
It's so true. And there's the thing of don't Google it. But in a point with a chronic illness, it's almost like when you're in that situation, when I was in my situation of the medicine giving me crazy side effects, it's almost like you have to Google, you have to do something or advocate for yourself with the doctor over and over, or else who knows how you'll end up, because they see patient after patient after patient, specifically in Canada. You're in there for 5 seconds and you're out. And they're humans too, which we always have to remember at the end of the day, right? My doctor is probably close to retirement. How long ago did he go to school to become a specialist? How does he even remember any of this stuff? It's just experience, right? So if he's never seen a side effect to a new medication or what's happening to you not show up on an MRI, how are they going to know?
Yes. I also ended up very soon after my original Crohn's diagnosis, I also got Guillain-Barré, which is nerve system disease. Supposedly, those two diseases have never been studied together. And so when I talk to the doctors and say, I have these two diseases, they have no reference at all about that. We have to be our own doctors, our own
advocates.
Yeah. Luckily, my wife can Google. I can't.
Amazing. Amazing. That's the most important, having that support.
Yes.
Have you ever looked at the natural pathway or holistic way, or have you just done natural medicine the whole time?
I think at this point, I've explored everything. I've had success with everything. And then I've had failure with everything too.
Yeah.
I've had great runs where I thought that I was eating so well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have an attack out of nowhere and sort of realize that the food was irrelevant. I have foods that set me off. I can't drink really anymore. Can't drink liquor, which I miss. For me, what works the most is eating whatever I'm craving. You know, I think that my body kind of tells me what to eat. My number one concern is keeping weight on, always bouncing off the bottom.
Yeah.
I'm 6'3" and I've been down to 145, you know, 150. Right now I'm at 170 at 6'3". That's very thin.
Yeah, very.
So I just eat whatever I can.
Yeah. There was a moment with my illness where I'm 5'7" and I was down to 113 because I could hardly eat anything. And then I went the holistic route and it worked for a good amount of time until it didn't. And how sustainable are they always in the societies that we live in when you're going to the extreme, extreme? It's almost like a full-time job managing your illness that way.
And the insurance companies.
Right.
I don't know what it's like in Canada, but I spend a day a week dealing with insurance companies.
That's one blessing. I've never had to do well. There have been a couple times they tried to deny medication, but my doctor deals with it and that's it. I always say I'd be bankrupt if I lived in the States because the amount of procedures and tests and things, hospital stays that I've had here are all free. And even medication after a certain point is free. So I haven't had to pay for much, thankfully. Not the same for you, I assume.
I've had some bills.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, are you willing to share like the biggest bills or how much you think over time, over the last 30 years or 20 years of diagnosis?
Well, I've always had good insurance. So I have, you know, no idea how much it is.
But even insurance is a lot per month, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we have to buy insurance and then have deductibles, $5,000 deductible. So you have to spend $5,000 before they start to kick in.
And are you paying like $1,000 a month for insurance?
Oh, at least.
Yes. Wow.
At least. Yes. Wow. And I've had bills. Well, you know, my monthly drug bill is probably $5,000.
Yeah.
I had an 89-day stay in the hospital with infusions every day. It was a $4,000 infusion every day.
But that's not coming out of pocket. That's insurance.
Right.
But out of pocket every year, you're paying over $17,000. Because if you're paying upwards of $1,000 a month plus $5,000 deductible, that's crazy. And there's people who make that just in their salaries. What do they do? I don't know. That's always perplexing to me being a Canadian. It's tough. And that's why you got to become an entrepreneur.
That is true. With a company big enough to buy insurance.
Exactly. Exactly. For everybody who's listening who does have a chronic illness and is looking at becoming successful in their own right, if that's starting a business or doing something completely different, what advice would you give them?
Well, my whole thesis, my whole point is that anyone can be an entrepreneur when you redefine the word. I hate the triumvirate of words that are normally associated. Entrepreneurship is not about creativity. 93% of businesses are copies. So don't try to find a new idea. Copy somebody. Entrepreneurship is not about risk. Successful entrepreneurs limit their investment to $5,000 and try to do it for less. And it's not about passion. I'm not passionate about what the businesses that I do. I like them. It's better than working for the man. But I am much more passionate about going to Disney. I don't think that saying that you should be passionate about your work is realistic. It's still work. I love being with you. I'd still rather be at Disney.
Right. I think that's going to hit home with so many people because it hit home with me. There's so many moments where I'm like, this isn't my whole world like it was when I started this business. But it's like, yeah, but we're still helping so many people. It's still a job. It still brings an income. I still have a bunch of employees I'm supporting. And I get to have days where I'm sick all day. Or I take a day off so that I can be more productive and it still supports me and my family. So that's such an important perspective, and especially in the world we live in today. Because on social media, it's like, what's your passion? Make that into a business. Here's how you're going to make a side hustle out of crocheting socks. Like, you're not going to make any money doing that. And I fall down the TikTok because I am, I would say, artist at heart. And there's people who are like, doing henna tattoos and painting murals. And I'm like, oh man, can I do that for a living? And then I'm like, yeah, I'd make like $10 a day. Like I can't monetize that to the extent that I need for it to be sustainable.
Sometimes you have to do your job so that you get more weeks of vacation.
Yes.
And then the solution to that is to find a job that you like. And my
Exactly.
premise is that that's easier as an entrepreneur than as an employee.
So true. And then what about the hardships? What about the times in entrepreneurship where you like, it feels like you can't go another minute. You've lost all your clients. I know it's not the same in radio, but I'm sure you dealt with it when starting that business. Nothing feels like it's going right. You feel like you made a mistake. You don't know how you're going to pay your next bill. What's your tips on that situation, especially while sick? Because that's a whole nother curve in the entrepreneurship game.
Yes, I have faced huge, huge setbacks in business. I want to make that clear. I have had a business bankruptcy. I've had payroll that I don't know how I'm going to make on Friday. I have every setback you can imagine I have had. And some of it was because of health and wasn't able to do things because it wasn't feeling up to it. And that led to business issues. The number one thing for me is to have somewhere for your mind to go that's a positive place and not a negative place. And so when I lay in bed at night is my worst hour of the night, of the day, because maybe you're tired, you don't feel really good, and you're sitting there and your brain is still working and you worry about the bills and all of that, and then you don't go to sleep. And so I have to resort to porn. And what I do, I have yacht porn. I look at yachts. My wife walks in and says, "Are you looking at porn?" I'm like, "Yes, I'm looking at yachts."
Didn't think that was going that way.
And then I also have fantasies that are born where I'm elected president and I get to do whatever I want. Then I can fall asleep.
That's
and
so,
so I
fascinating.
Have my biggest problem is getting my brain away from the bad. And it's simply by focusing on something else, choosing something else to think about.
Yeah.
And if it's a silly little dream that you're all of a sudden president, that's better than sitting there crying.
It's so true. And I think it's why a lot of entrepreneurs are so delulu, or there's a lot of moments where we're like, we can dream so big that other lay people, I guess, in corporate don't have the ability to dream that big because you have to. Because when you can't pay the payroll on Friday and you're not dreaming and thinking outside of the box and finding something to make your mind, you're not going to be successful in business. It's just, that's why 85% of businesses fail. I love that. And I didn't think that was going to go to yacht porn, but I love the analogy. And I actually watch, I call it stupid YouTube, but I watch like prison YouTube and I watch like drama YouTube. And so I hear of these prisoners who were like in prison for 20 plus years and then they got out and now they're starting these awesome businesses. And that motivates me. I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, we can use our, like, we can make big things out of, let's go. I got this tomorrow. And then I fall asleep. So I love that. It's something to, like you said, something to look forward in your mind that's positive and then get back up. Keep going. Thank you so much. So last but not least, the red carpet is yours. Where can they find you? Of course, we'll link everything in the show notes, but where can they find you? Any last thoughts, tips, anything?
The last thought is, you can be more successful as an entrepreneur than you think. You know, you don't have to, your goal doesn't need to be to make a billion or a million. Making 100,000 is enough.
Absolutely.
And that is possible. There are so many systems that work and give you the flexibility to be sick at the same time.
So amazing. Thank you so much for being on the show. This was an awesome
My pleasure.
Episode. All right, everybody, remember, dream big. It's possible for you, and your next version of success is around the corner. Mwah!